Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Last week we started our feud with KQED and we asked Sarah Hotchkiss to pick a side, and sure enough she picked our side.
I told you she would.
So we haven't heard back from Julie Depish or anybody else yet.
Oh, really? I thought Julie Depish would get back to you. Aren't you guys like pals?
No. Rachel Miro, no one else got back to us.
Jerks.
Aww. I know.
Well, Sarah's all that matters anyhow.
Maysoon, we got an email in from Moose Collective.
Okay.
And they said, there is a postcard set called Possible Show that they've put together.
It's really great.
It is a postcard set called Possible Show, which was put together by Moose Collective to support the Postal Service and raise money for People's Breakfast Oakland and Hotels Not Graves.
I love that.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so you can get one set for $30. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's 29 postcards. I think it's more than that.
It's a lot.
No, it is. It's 29 artists, but I feel like there was more postcards than that. Some of the artists include me, Kate Rhodes, Libby Black, Kevin Chin, Keisha Lucas, and Alicia McCarthy, among many other glorious and talented artists.
All local Bay Area artists, right?
I believe so.
I think so, too.
And printed in San Francisco by Kolba Press.
Yeah.
Okay. So these are going to be available until January 1st, and you can get one set for $30. Two sets for $60, three sets for $70.
Oh, you really get the discount on the three sets, so maybe just go right for that.
Yes, because they say one set for $30, that's the regular price. And mm-hmm. then they say two sets for $60, $10 off.
Oh, okay, so they must have meant $50.
If you order before January 1st, you'll get a limited edition digital print collaboration between Shirin Kalabari, Natasha Lowy, and Beryl Orr. To order, you can DM at Muse Collective, that's M-U-Z Collective, on Instagram, or you can email Muse, that's M-U-Z, at MooseCollective.com. They're starting to run out, so you need to act fast.
Get
while
in
supplies
there.
Last.
Don't miss out. Some really great postcards.
Get in there. Happy holidays from Muse sweet. Collective. Okay, Maysoon, last week we got our recommendations for Bay Area-based
yes,
movies.
And they happen to all be sci-fi.
And so today is sci-fi movie holiday blowout.
Except for just one movie.
Except we only watched one of the movies because it was too much to deal with because we had to do some shenanigans and I had to email Maysoon the movie. And so... I can't be just shooting off 5 gigs every day. Right, Maysoon?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we ended up watching Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Yes.
Maysoon, I gotta say right off the bat, this is my favorite movie I've ever seen.
Have you seen it before?
Never.
Okay, I hadn't either, and... It was very entertaining. I was like, wow, this couldn't have been a better movie for me to watch, quite honestly.
Especially, I watched it today on the solstice.
Oh, you just watched it today. Okay, cool.
Monday, December 21st.
That's right. So this movie was came out in 1986, and it was directed by Leonard Nimoy, who plays Spock
yep.
in the movie yes. itself and in the early Star Trek series. Which
Never
is
forget
awesome.
Leonard Nimoy, accomplished actor and photographer.
Oh, is he? I didn't know he was a photographer. Oh, well, that makes sense if he's a director. That's perfect.
Also a singer, a songwriter.
Okay, so I didn't see this is Star Trek IV. I don't think I've seen Star Trek 1, 2, or 3, but basically...
Nope, me either.
I know. This is basically like the... Obviously, it's part of a series of movies that all have stories that relate to one another.
You don't need to see, though. We didn't see three, but you get the idea of what happened.
But the point is like, they're going home. They supposedly, what happened? Like, the team blew up one of the Klingon ships or something?
Look, what happened here is they fucking, this is one thing I don't understand, and then I don't think was totally addressed in this movie. Why is the Star Trek world so okay with being racist against the Klingons?
Yeah, I don't get that. Is that a thing throughout? I mean, it certainly was when I was...
I feel like they address it in The Next Generation, you know, with Captain Picard and Data and all that. LeVar Burton.
Yeah, the Klingons were definitely like the one, I guess the one group that was not to be, that was like the scary group or the ones that were like vicious and
the group that it's okay demonized. To like hate, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I don't get that. So it starts out with the Federation is having a trial where a Klingon is saying, hey, you guys need to fucking basically kill Captain Kirk, or who's Admiral Kirk now.
Yeah.
Because he's done war crimes against the Klingons and killed a bunch of them.
Right.
Behold the quintessential devil in these matters, James T. Kirk, renegade and terrorist. Not only is he responsible for the murder of a Klingon crew, the theft of the Klingon vessel, see now the real plot and intentions. Even as this Federation was negotiating a peace treaty with us, Kirk was secretly developing the Genesis torpedo, conceived by Kirk's son and test detonated by the Admiral himself.
That's right. And they did that. And so, they did that in order to save Spock, right? Wasn't that the premise?
Yeah, it sounds like Spock was in danger and he got saved by Kirk's son who died.
Oh, right. Kirk's son died, but there was a huge battle, right, where tons of Klingons were killed. And so the beginning of the movie starts with they have a Klingon ship on Vulcan, which is, you know, the planet. Spock's home planet. And Spock's memory has been completely wiped from, like, whatever, the fighting or the war, I guess. And so he's relearning.
Yeah, he remembers. It seems like he remembers everything except that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Like, his personality is gone.
Well, his...
But he knows who his mom is. He knows everything about flying the fucking spaceship.
He knows literally everything about everything except for being a human. In that beginning scene, right? Where he's learning everything back. Yeah,
because keep in mind, everyone, Spock is half Vulcan, half human on his mom's side.
Right. So at the...
This is a huge deal.
So he's doing this, like, multiple... He's doing this, like, trivia, this, like, this training where he's answering multiple questions at the same time. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, it's not trivia, Mesu.
Okay, it's a training.
He's not playing Trivial Pursuit. He's, like, getting a mind analysis or something.
Okay, maybe I trivialized that scene. But at first, I did think it was, again, I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. And then at the very end of that scene, his mom comes and talks to him, and she's like, how do you feel? And he was just sort of like, I have no idea. I don't understand what you're saying.
He could answer everything except how do you feel.
Right. So that's kind of where the movie starts, and they're going back to Earth for this trial. But then as they're headed back to Earth, there's this probe going through Earth.
What the fuck is the probe?
I know, man. I know. It was kind of wild. So it's like, this is weird. Like,
what the actual fuck is this thing? It looks like a big rod.
Yeah, with a little protrusion.
Just chilling in space.
With a little protrusion.
Yeah, with a little circle thing coming out.
Yeah, and basically any ship it passes or any planet it passes, it causes this, just wreaks havoc. Like, all their systems are down, the ocean's evaporating. You know, it's this, like, red alert everywhere it goes.
Disaster.
It's a total disaster. They're basically...
It's a total disaster.
The probe is giving off this sound, this signal, this...
And now keep in mind that the fucking Federation headquarters is in San Francisco.
San Francisco!
So we're seeing the Golden Gate Bridge is having a storm all around it.
Yeah, it's super dramatic.
The maps and the, like, you know... main room, the fucking command center.
Yeah.
It has a big map of the bay, the San Francisco Bay.
Yeah, it's amazing. So before...
Earth is represented by San Francisco.
Isn't that amazing? 1986 people, yes. San Francisco 100%. I love it. It's interesting.
Hell yes.
So they're on their way back and they realize there's this sort of chaos happening, and they were able to connect with their home base on Earth and learn that there's something going on. And so they decide to like try to resolve the problem before going to Earth, because they're like, don't come here. You're not going to be able to do any, like, we're in a complete chaotic mess.
Yeah. Don't come near here.
Yeah.
Because they're coming in on a fucking Vulcan or a Klingon bird of prey ship.
Yeah, Klingon spaceship, exactly.
Which is, again, the racism against the Klingons. You got fucking Bones keeps making all these jokes about how the ship smells bad.
I know. I know. I noticed that too. There was lots of like.
Very problematic.
It smells bad. They talk like everything was like primitive, like all these words that was sort of like, man, that's shitty. that's definitely like racism playing out right there. And
this is all revised in the Next Generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you have Worf is a Klingon. He's part of the Federation, you know.
Yeah. So basically, they're trying to translate. The probe is sending a signal. No one can translate what the signal or what the message is saying. That they, you know, they run it through all these systems. Right. Every ship that's being affected, and even like the Federation, is can't determine it. And so their goal, I forget, how do they determine that it's. It turns out
Spock is like, let me, you know, do some analysis. And he's like got a computer with like a million different whales. He's like cycling through all these whales, and it comes to the humpback whale, and he's like, that's the one. Sure enough, turns out the probe is blasting everything with whale songs.
It's amazing.
Humpback and so, whale songs.
And so what we don't know, or what we learn, I guess, we learn at the beginning, is that at the start of the movie, we're in the 23rd century. And in the 23rd century, yes. Whales
that's
are extinct.
That's when Star Trek happens, always. Okay.
Whales are extinct. And so they have to go back in time to the 20th century when whales still exist to try to literally transport, find some whales, transport them.
Well, hang on. You're getting a little ahead of yourself here. You're getting too hard. So Kirk has a good idea. He's like, look. We're fucked. Earth is, like, being destroyed. We're on this shitty Klingon ship. Our only hope at this point is to try to slingshot around the sun to, like,
travel
gain enough speed where we're going to time travel.
Yeah.
Okay?
It was crazy.
Sure enough, they do it. They're like, well, I guess we can give it a shot, you know? And fucking Sulu is like, sweet, man. Yeah, okay. They fucking are blasting towards the sun. The ship is vibrating and shit because it's kind of a crappy ship. They got the red lights on their faces.
Yep.
They slingshot around this like CG looking sun, which is not to scale.
Yeah.
Not to scale. And then all of a sudden we're in this like vapor wave fucking, I don't even know what that sequence was. It was like fucking 2001 A Space Odyssey where their heads are floating. They're like,
oh,
heads are
that's
like
right. I fucking forgot about that. That was so
in
weird.
Like a vaporwave void.
In space. Yeah.
What
it
the
was like,
fuck
it was
that?
Like a grayed, their faces grayed out, like appearing and disappearing out of like space.
No
that
idea what the fuck that meant. That was so psychedelic. And then
it was kind of great though,
sudden,
right? The special effects were so old school and amazing.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And then we cut from whatever the hell that sequence was, this like poetic, like, I don't know, like surrealist montage, to then they're all just asleep on the ship and they wake up and they're like, what time is it? And
yeah.
They're like, 1986.
What year is it? Right.
Yeah, or whatever.
It's amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And the one good thing about the Klingon ship is that it has a cloaking device.
Right.
So they can go right down and land on
right
Earth
in Golden Gate Park. They landed right in Golden Gate Park, you guys. It was amazing. I was like, oh my God, I love it.
Yes.
It was really great.
Okay, so then they break into teams. Fucking Chekov and Uhura have to go find a nuclear submarine to steal power so that they can power the ship. And, like, fix the dilithium crystals.
They're trying to get to Alameda.
Then Sulu.
You remember when they were on the streets of San Francisco? They were like, do you know how to get to Alameda? We need the nuclear mission. Nuclear missiles. Everyone's like, what?
The nuclear vessels.
Vessels. The nuclear vessels. And they ask a cop, and the cop literally just stares at them. I'm like, any cop today would, like, fucking arrest you.
Keep in mind the Cold War.
In the 80s?
Yeah, dude, Russian guy looking for nuclear weapons. That's the whole thing with this guy.
No, I know. That's what happens later on.
Okay, Maysoon. And then Sulu has to get a helicopter.
Okay.
I don't know if they... you know, they're like, look, we got to get these whales. Sulu's getting a helicopter to, like, airlift the whales or whatever the fuck. And then, but really, what was the helicopter for? Just to move the plexi, the glass.
Oh, that's actually what it ended up doing. They basically had to modify their ship to hold two fucking humpback whales. And so they were...
Yeah, Bones and Scotty go to, like, a plexiglass factory to get shit to make the tank to keep the whales.
I think it's more than Kirk just a plexi. I think it's, like, a science, like, a crazy factory building. It's not just plexi. They're, like, talking about all these obscure materials and stuff.
They were doing an agreement with the guy where they're like, we'll give you this formula for clear aluminum if you give us whatever we need to make our tank for the whales. Okay, then best part of the entire fucking movie, Kirk and Spock have to go to this amazing fake aquarium in Sausalito, which is really the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
I couldn't remember. Was it that? Okay.
Even had the same logo.
Oh, awesome. Wait, what was it called? It was called like the Cretacean Institute or something? Institute is what it was called.
Yes. And so they go there, you know, and Kirk is having to deal with Spock not remembering everything. And it's like kind of funny because Spock is like back to his old original Vulcan thing where he can't understand any human shit. And so they go to the fucking aquarium. They meet the fucking lady who played the mom from Seventh Heaven.
Is that right?
Who is the...
Oh my God.
Who is the most dedicated whale scientist ever in the history of humanity.
I mean, beyond belief.
All she cares about is she's like in love with these two whales. They have two whales.
They're called Gracie and George.
Gracie and George.
The Cetacean Institute is the only museum in the world exclusively devoted to whales. As you can see, we have a great deal to offer. But that is small compared to what we know, or rather what we don't know, about whales. The first commonly held misconception is that whales are fish. They're not. They're mammals, just like you and me. Warm-blooded, needing air to breathe, and producing milk to nurse their young.
Do whales attack people, like in Moby Dick?
No. No, most whales don't even have teeth. They have a soft, gum-like tissue that strains vast amounts of tiny shrimp for food, and that is the limit of their hostility.
Yep. And so they get there, and they're like, okay, here's the whales. Thank God. They're, like, in a little tank. She's doing a whole spiel about whales and the extension of whales. This movie is pro-whale propaganda.
Yeah, full on. Full on save the whales right here.
There's no two whales about it. And so they're there. Best part of the whole movie, there she's like, okay, let's go down into the aquarium.
She's like, the
where
best
you can,
way
like,
to see
look
the whales is from underneath, so you can see them in the water below the surface.
And it's amazing. And so they're down there, and then sure enough, here comes Spock in his little
lo and
underpants.
Behold, Spock is swimming with the whales. You see him, and he's basically like has his head against the whale with his arms on it.
He's mind-melding with the fucking whales and communicating with them.
Oh, he's mind-melding. God, of course.
Yes.
Okay.
Vulcan,
I forgot. Mind-meld. I just haven't been in this world in a long time.
Well,
okay. That makes a lot of sense. And all of a sudden, of course, Captain Kirk or Admiral Kirk looks up. He's like, oh, fucking hell. How did Spock get in there? And
then that part was so funny.
It was amazing. For a second, I was like, is this like SeaWorld where like the people who work there swim with the animals and just to study them? And I was like, oh no, that's fucking Spock.
Yes, dude. Spock is in there. The lady from Seventh Heaven. She's like.
Yeah, she's really upset.
And then sure enough, like 5 seconds later, they're headed back to San Francisco. And then she just rolls up on them with her truck with her I Heart Whale sticker and then becomes friends with them. And then basically the rest.
But that's because Spock gives one important piece of information when he gets out of the water, when she's yelling at them. He basically reveals that Gracie is pregnant. And of course, like, no one would know that. It seems like no one would know that because they hadn't announced it yet. The scientists hadn't announced it yet.
Right. And he says that they're going to be extinct.
She probably knew. She was like, okay, these guys are somewhat for real, but they're also, what the fuck? They seem like total jokers.
She's curious as hell.
Yeah.
She's a scientist.
Yeah.
And all she wants is the best for these whales who are supposed to be released back into the open water.
Right.
In just one day's time.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. And then she and Kirk go to dinner together after they drop Spock back off at the
Klingon spaceship. Yeah.
But she doesn't see the ship because it's invisible.
Well, it's amazing because Spock is like standing in this empty field and all of a sudden this like orange light field opens up and he just gets sucked in.
Yeah, he's getting beamed up.
Beamed up.
Okay, but right there. Maysoon, where yes. do you think the whale scientist and Kirk are getting dinner?
I know. I was trying to think. I actually rewound to try to figure that out. One, it's a large restaurant. It's large. So
it's a huge Italian restaurant. One of the funniest moments of the movie is when she's like, "Do you like Italian?" And then Kirk and Spock argue about whether or not each of them likes Italian.
Yeah. I want to guess it's somewhere on the in Fisherman's Wharf kind of area. But it also seemed kind of fancy. It's
a pizza place.
Oh, yeah. Do you actually know where it is? Did you look it up?
No, I don't even know if it's in San Francisco.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I mean, it kind of reminded me of Greens because it's that kind of big open air place, just sort of a little bit redesigned on the inside.
No, it's way not as nice as that place.
I wrote a quote down that said, "Did you see that? No, and neither did you, so shut up." Do you remember what that was from?
Oh, yeah, the garbage men when the ship lands in Golden Gate Park, there's two garbage men taking out like a never-ending amount of garbage cans.
They have like eight garbage
like
cans.
Like hundreds of garbage cans.
It's so crazy.
And then they're like, let's just go ahead and get out of here.
Yeah, but they love, like, they're like, "Did you see that?" And the other guy's like, "No, and neither did you, so shut up." And they, like, drive off. I'm like, it's so funny. It's hysterical. Like, old school San Francisco.
So wild.
Oh, my God. They took the bus. Do you remember they took the bus across the Golden Gate Bridge to get to the aquarium or to the Whale Institute?
And Spock does the, like, Vulcan nerve pinch thing on that punk guy listened to his boom
box. The boom box. He kept turning up the music when Spock told him to turn it down. There's just so many little moments like that were so fucking good. It was a good one.
Okay, so then they work it all out. There's a lot of capers and scrapes. Chekhov falls off the ship that they're stealing the nuclear stuff from. Yeah. And then they have to rescue him out of the hospital in person because Scotty can't beam him back to the ship. That part was really fun, in my opinion, because they have to, like, do a lot of, like, subterfuge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because Bones keeps telling everyone how fucking medieval all the medical technology
is. I know. It's amazing. He was like, no way in hell are they going to operate on him. They're going to kill him. You know, and like he gives like a lady in the hallway a pill for dialysis. She's like healed. She like regrew
her
new kidney.
I loved that.
That was amazing. I'm like, gosh, we need them to come back. We need them to come to time travel now.
I love that.
Oh, and Spock in the beginning trying to like understand all the different like, you know, the way we use metaphors in language.
Well, yeah, and swearing.
Just swearing. Yeah, it was really cute. Him trying to figure that out. I loved it.
Yeah, it's a very cute movie. So anyhow, they figure everything out. They get the way they go around the sun again. They did not do another bizarre floating head montage, sadly. They get back to the future. They release the whales into the San Francisco Bay.
Yeah.
And then the whales communicate with the fucking probe thing.
Yep.
And the probe just closes up. It subs back in the circle and then leaves. And they never explained. I mean, did they ever fucking explain?
Like what the communication was? No. Like what was the probe saying?
A cylinder in space playing whale songs and destroying planets. And why did, you know, what the fuck?
Yeah. No, they never explained that part. It was just like, okay, great, the probe's going. We no longer have any interest in this story. It's like totally done.
And they
done.
Go back to the trial, and then they basically tell Kirk, like, oh, you've been demoted, but basically you get to go back to your normal life on the Enterprise.
Which he's obviously very happy
And that's the end of
about.
The movie. Mm-hmm. Okay, what were some other top Bay Area moments? I'm still trying to figure out what the fuck this pizza place was.
Okay. Well, I wrote down the bus, and I'm glad you realized it was Monterey Bay, because I thought it was maybe the Bay Area Discovery Museum, which is across the bay. I mean, North Beach, that was great. They walked by Vesuvius and up Columbus Street, classic little moments in San Francisco. But it's mostly, like, images of the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, like, around. And that their building, the Federation building, was, like, very close to the bridge. So I think it was, like, would have been, like, North Point. You know, there were moments when you could see Chrissy Field, Supposedly, who was it? Not Scotty. Chekhov? Was he the one in the hospital?
Yes.
The hospital he was in the mission, they said. He says somewhere in the mission. But they didn't really, show any kind of pathway there.
No, nothing of the mission.
But I felt proud that the mission was represented briefly in this movie.
Mission was mentioned. Yeah. Okay, here we go, Maysoon. Here's a little fact from IMDb. The restaurant is filmed in an actual restaurant.
Okay.
That scene. And they didn't have a pizza oven. But because the characters order pizza, they order two fucking pizzas and then only one comes out. Okay, Paramount bought and installed a pizza oven to make the kitchen more believable.
Wow.
What the hell? You don't even see the kitchen.
I don't think so. I don't remember.
The oven was then given to the restaurant after filming was completed, but after all that effort, the oven is only visible for 5 seconds of the film. I don't even remember seeing it.
I don't either.
The plexiglass scenes where Scotty and Bones are trying to get that guy to give them plexiglass or whatever.
Yeah.
That is filmed at the Taylor Plastics Factory in Santa Ana, California.
Oh.
They really do make large custom plastic panels, and one of their clients is the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Oh, awesome. I love that. Oh, what that's so fuck? Cute. That's so cool.
That blows my mind.
You didn't find out what you don't actually know which restaurant it was though.
Wait, we really got to figure it out because this is truly the most important part of the movie.
Maybe it wasn't even in San Francisco. Maybe it was like an LA restaurant.
It has to be in San Francisco.
Why? The aquarium wasn't, and neither was the plexiglass place.
Don't you think it has to be?
I mean, I would like for it to be, but it's also a really weird kind of restaurant that I rarely see those kinds of massive restaurants in San Francisco. Where there's like a huge open dining room with like 50 tables. Massive. That doesn't really exist.
And then like a bar in the back.
Yeah. That's pretty unusual. I mean, the larger restaurants here are broken up into smaller rooms.
They're saying that maybe it's Fiorella's on Fountain Street because that's mentioned by a Enterprise NX-01 crew member named Hoshi Sato.
Jesus Christ, these people are really on it. Wow, it's like intensive. I did my very best to take notes and I'm still just like, I don't know, what was that person's name? Okay, but what was interesting also is that fucking Dr. Jillian, or whale Dr. Jillian,
goes with them. She loves the whales so much
that she goes back, she goes forward in time to the 23rd century.
She's like, fuck my entire life.
She's like, I've got nothing here.
My entire family.
These whales are everything. I'm going with you. And then she's like, you know, Admiral Kirk is like, oh, cute. Maybe I'll have a little, a little like fling with this woman now that she's
That's
here.
His whole thing is he goes to planets to fuck.
I know. But there. she was like, I'm cool, bro. I'm going to be on the science ship doing my shit. I was like, yes.
She's like, not right now. I actually need to fuck these whales.
She was like, see you around the galaxy, sucker. It was kind of amazing.
Yeah, she does
like,
give him
like
a little
that.
Kiss on the cheek.
Well, yeah, but I mean, she was definitely not waiting for him to save her. It was pretty cute because he was kind of like, oh, shoot. Okay. I was like, what did you think she was going to do, dude?
Bang him like every other woman in freaking Star Trek.
Well, she's a little special.
She's a scientist.
Years? Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, that's intensive behavior.
Maysoon, what about the fact that they have these two humpback whales in a damn tank at an aquarium?
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. They're actually also, according to some trivia I saw, the actual whale activists were mad at the movie because they didn't know that the whales in the movie were not real whales.
Dude, they're fucking massive. Of course they're not real whales.
They're like animatronics.
Okay, there's two things I wanted to say about this movie. One, it was dedicated to the people, the scientists who lost their lives on the spaceship, the space shuttle Challenger the year before. Yep.
The crew of the Challenger
explosion. I thought it was super really sweet of them to acknowledge that in the movie. I was like, oh, that's really awesome. And then secondly, Jimbo and I were talking about this movie because he watched part of it with me because he remembered seeing it in the theaters when he was a kid, which is crazy. I was like, how awesome and fun would that have been to see on a big screen? But supposedly this movie was very loosely based, yes and no, around this story in the Bay Area of Humphrey the whale, Humphrey the humpback whale, that went into San Francisco Bay and traveled up the bay into the Delta, into the Sacramento River Delta. And there was like this whole like, I mean, maybe like 2 to 4 weeks commotion of trying to turn the whale around and get him back in the bay. And there's this, I've watched so many, like, you know, so much news footage around Humphrey the whale who gets like caught in the bay, and there, all these scientists are trying to get him back out into the ocean. But supposedly that kind of like sparked a lot of talk around, you know, sort of not saving the whales, but like doing more research around whales and learning about how they communicate and figuring out like why whales sort of leave the ocean, like what happens with them. Is it a sign of distress and whatnot? So there's some weird relationship between like that story and then making this movie. It's not obviously the same story, but I thought that was super interesting. And the same whale, Humphrey, did the same thing. So he did this in 1985, this whale, where he left his pod. They were migrating down to Mexico. He did it again in 1990. He's like coming back to say, hey. And supposedly Rio Nido on the Delta, one of these towns, has like a plaque out to Humphrey out in like one of their squares. Isn't that so cute? It's fucking amazing. And there's a great like children's book about Humphrey the whale.
Whoa.
There were like songs that were like schools in the towns where the river, the waterway existed. Mm-hmm. School children and their like music teachers were creating songs about the whale. I mean, it was like full on and integrated into these communities' lives, because the whale was there for so like for a considerable amount of time, right? Like it wasn't just overnight. It was like weeks and weeks and weeks. So people would like, there's all these amazing footage of people like standing on the riverbank and like looking at him and, you know, making up stories about him. It's like, it's kind of incredible. I loved it. So that's Humphrey crazy. The whale, if you have any children in your life, there's this really lovely book called, the book is called Humphrey the Lost Whale.
Okay, got it.
So good. I have to get a copy.
Okay, Maysoon, here's the deal. I think the pizza place might be fake according to this Wikipedia page, but Maysoon, guess who wasn't fake?
What? Who?
Okay, remember the part where Uhura and Chekhov are just asking people on the street where to find nuclear vessels?
Yes.
And there's a woman who's telling them, oh, I think that, you know, Navy
base. It's across the bay. Yeah.
It's in Alameda. Yeah, in the bay in Alameda. And they're like, we just fucking said Alameda.
They're like, yeah, we know. We're trying to figure out how to get there, bitch.
Apparently, that lady might have been an actual person on the street. They shot that scene with a hidden camera.
Are you kidding? No.
No. There's some kind of contradictory. They definitely shot it with a hidden camera, but there's some contradictory accounts of whether that woman was just a rando on the street or if she was an extra. Or what
I don't believe that
was.
Because are people, I just don't feel like people would, especially in the 80s, I don't think people would have just ignored them as much as people did. Like, she was the only person who responded to them. Even the cop would not say a word to them.
Well, I think the cop was probably an actor.
Okay. Anyhow, this movie, if you're a whale lover or a sea, if you're really into, you know, the oceans and sea life, this, I highly recommend this movie. It was really
entertaining. I recommend this movie to anyone who wants to experience the best movie.
Yeah. Such a good recommendation, Jim.
I was talking to my friend of the show, Bobble Rob, my friend Rob.
Oh, yeah.
Talking to him about this movie, and he said one of the things that he loves about it is it's not like a lot of the other, like Star Trek or whatever, like adventure movies.
Yeah.
Where it's like there's some big bad guy. And it's usually like some revenge thing.
Yeah.
From the bad guy. The enemy in this movie is climate change.
Yeah. Well, actually humans, but climate change.
Yes. I mean, the enemy in this movie is our own disregard for the environment and lives other than human lives.
Yeah. Basically, they're talking about how, you know, the whaling industry is killing, is like,
no, not the just the whaling industry.
That's kind of what the movie mostly drew it around, don't you think?
No, all the various, because remember when they come back, when they first get back to the 20th century, and they're like, well, judging by the pollution in the atmosphere, this is the last half of the 20th century.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
They're talking about our carbon emissions, our fucking plastics, our fucking nasty attitude, fucking up the earth.
Super nasty attitude. They couldn't even give them any advice on the street or turn their fucking boombox down out of respect for their neighbors.
And we're killing the whales, which are our only hope at salvation when the big rod comes and tries to destroy the earth.
Oh my God. So basically they repopulate. They have a couple hundred years of no whales, and then it sounds like they repopulate because Gracie's pregnant. Well, that's the hope, yeah, right? That's the dream.
Then what is going to happen then? Then Gracie Jr. is going to have to, like, fuck her dad?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess. Or some other, I don't know. Kate, I don't know, like, dude. Can't get into that.
If you're going to go back in time to repopulate a species, you got to get 16 of them.
Is that the magic number?
I think so.
Is that what Noah did?
If Noah was real, that's what he would have done.
Except for he did two of each. Weird. Anyhow.
Okay, now. So we salute you, Star Trek IV. We loved this movie. It is a dyed-in-the-wool Bay Area movie because it is about the sanctity of the environment and of whales.
And the ocean.
And pizza.
Yeah, I feel like. And the ocean is such an identifying attribute to the Bay Area, the ocean.
Yep. And no matter what kind of emergency you're experiencing, you always have time to get the pizza to go.
That's right. They did do that, yeah.
And furthermore, understanding that all different people have all different skill sets and ways of relating to each other, and that difference doesn't mean deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Mason?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay, I love this movie. I give it 10 out of 10 stars.
Sweet.
And how about you, Mason?
I also give it 10 out of 10.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I loved it. It was very entertaining. I had a great time watching it.
Okay, Mason, when it was 2014, I'm going to say. Remember all those years ago?
Yeah, so long ago.
I went to the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles to see Andrea Fraser give a performance as part of a show out there for a show called Take It or Leave It.
Okay.
Okay. And Leonard Nimoy was in the audience.
Oh my God, amazing. Really?
And it was wild because it was like a kind of, she was doing a performance where she was basically like giving you a tour kind of the gallery.
Okay.
And so we were all like having to kind of move for her. So we were all just standing in a big gallery space. And Katie stood right next to Leonard Nimoy and looked him right in the eyes.
And said?
Just looked at him and had a meaningful eye contact.
Whoa. Really?
And that was like, we were freaking out.
I would have been freaking out. I don't know if I would have been able to stand next to him.
I know. And I mean, I was already freaking out because of Andrea Fraser, but yeah. Then Leonard Nimoy being there was like even beyond.
How cool is that? Is he, I wonder if he and Andrea were like buds.
I'm sure he was like in it with all, because he was an artist. He had like fine art photography shows and stuff.
So fucking cool. What a cool guy.
Yeah, we give 100, let's give 100 salutes to national treasure and legend,
yes,
Leonard Nimoy.
Simon Nimoy.
Okay, Mason, I'm going to be looking out for the humpback whales from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Congratulations Pine Tree.